Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. I'm very excited and honored to have Rance Howard, my next guest, on the show. Rance is a consummate actor and gentleman. He's been acting 60-plus years, and he has seen so many changes, starting in theater through the early days of TV and still working, just finished a film as we speak in shooting in Michigan. So I'll be back in about 20 seconds with Rance Howard, veteran actor, Hollywood patriarch, to share an actor's life. Looking forward to it, and we'll be back with Rance in 20 seconds. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and welcome, Rance. How are you today? Thank you so much for visiting today.
Hey, you're welcome, Richard. Thanks for asking me. This is a real treat, and I'm looking forward to our chat.
Yeah, I sure am, too. Well, I remember you told me you got bit by the bug when you were a young man in school doing a play. What was it like growing up in Oklahoma, and how did you get bit by the bug to act?
Okay, let me try to give you a succinct play-by-play of that.
Okay.
I was going to a little one-room country school. It was called Little Beaver, and that's a school where one teacher teaches all eight grades. And so you have, first through eight all in one schoolroom and one teacher teaching us all at the same time. And so every year they would do a Christmas program. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of entertainment. The nearest movie was 7 miles away. We didn't have any television. We still had radio. You could listen to the radio. But anyway, entertainment was really a luxury there in Oklahoma at that time. And so the teacher, she's preparing the program for Christmas, and she comes to me, and she didn't ask me. She told me, she said, "You're going to play this part in this It's a one-act play with three characters, and it's called The Hired Man, and you're going to play The Hired Man." And I said, "Yes, ma'am." And I was in the seventh grade at the time. And so she gave us the script, which she had typed up. And I learned the dialogue. We had a few rehearsals and mainly concentrated on learning the dialogue. The schoolroom did not have a stage, but the area where the teacher kept her desk, that would become the stage, and there was a wire that went wall to wall that they hung bed sheets on. That was the curtain. And lights, I don't know what kind. We had some kind of gas lights that the teacher would get and bring in when we were doing a show. So, the show started. The curtain opened, and I walked out on stage and said my first line. Now, Richard, there is a thing that happens to me, and I've talked to other actors, and it sometimes happens to them. When just everything is perfect. Everything is just right. You're feeling just right. Everything. And the play starts. You suddenly become the character. It's like a transformation. You transform from being yourself to being that character. And that's actually, I think, the purest form of method acting when that happens to you. And it's a jolt. It's almost orgasmic. And that happened to me there in the seventh grade there at that little one-room country school. And I was no longer myself. I was the character. And when that happens, you don't change a lot, but everything you say, everything you do becomes totally natural. And you may just little things just kind of come to you. And the audience can sense that. And they love it because you're really being, it's the essence of acting when this happens. And I was getting such audience approval. They were laughing, they were applauding, and now I've never had any experience like this before. And I said I'm in the seventh grade, and I suddenly, it's the darndest thing, Richard, I suddenly realized that I had control of the audience. I had all those people in the palm of my hand. And so I went ahead and we did the play, and I didn't change, you know, maybe change blocking a little bit, maybe just change things a little bit, didn't change any dialogue. And when the play was over, we got just an absolute standing ovation. It was incredible. And then after the whole program was over, I had neighbors, men, men I didn't even know, were coming up. One man I still remember patted me on the head, said, "You're a mighty fine chore boy." Well, this was really, really heady stuff, and I'd never experienced anything like that before. And okay, so the evening finally ended, and we went home, and I began to think about it. And the more I thought about it, I kind of realized what had happened, and I thought, my gosh, that's what I want to do. I want to be an actor. I want to feel that again. That's that's a fantastic thing. And so I thought, a couple of days later, I was saying, well, how, from here, starting here, how can I move toward being an actor? And so I did every little school play, every little sketch, everything I could to get in front of an audience. And I never had that sensation, that kind of sensation again. I didn't have that again until I was in college in the drama school and working in a play, and it happened to me again, and I knew, well, yeah, that's, you know, that settles it. I mean, that does happen. It wasn't just some kind of a fluke. Back at school, I went to high school and I took speech. That was as close as we could get to any kind of a drama class, was a speech class, and I took that. And I wanted to be an actor, and I didn't know about New York and Broadway and plays running for 2 or 3 years or something like that. All I knew an actor did was act in movies. And the movies I had seen mostly were Gene Autry and Roy Rogers and Tex Ritter and Bob Steele and some of those guys. Mm-hmm. But that was fine. I wanted to do that. And I thought, if I can just get out there, if I can get out to Hollywood, I'm a lot better rider, horseback rider, a lot better cowboy that Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and Tex Ritter, those guys, they're not really cowboys. I was a real cowboy. I was a real, you know, and I had a wonderful horse. And so I had just made in my mind I was going to ride my horse out to Hollywood, and I just knew that if you know, any of those movie people saw me riding a horse down Hollywood Boulevard or somewhere, they'd say, "That's a movie star. That's a, you know, sign him up." Well, I was very naive and very ignorant, but I was telling all my friends and my classmates, when I get out of high school, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my horse and ride to Hollywood, California. The principal heard about this, and he called me in, and he said, "What's this I hear about you going to Hollywood?" And I said, "Yes, sir," and I explained to him my desire and what I planned to do. And he said, "You know, there's nothing wrong with your ambition." And he said, "What you should do is, before you ride your horse to Hollywood," he said, "you ought to go to down to the University of Oklahoma. They have a drama school down there. And study acting. Study acting and learn something about it. So when you get to Hollywood and you're suddenly, you know, faced with having to act in a scene, you'll know what to do." Well, that made really good sense to me. So I laid my plans in that direction. My dad thought I was crazy. My mother thought, well, you know, if that's what he wants to do, let's let him do it. And so I did. I enrolled in the drama school down at the University of Oklahoma and learned then suddenly about Broadway and plays, legitimate plays, and the fact that a play could run for 2 or 3 or 4 years, that was exciting. And so, okay, so I studied drama there. I went there 5 semesters, and I began to learn that the instructors, the teachers, the professors, they weren't encouraging their students to be professional actors. In fact, they were discouraging. They wanted us to be professors, teachers, somehow, you know, executors, executives in a drama school or something like that. And they really even put down being a professional actor. Well, I wanted to be an actor. I had to be an actor, and I knew that if I couldn't be an actor, then I had to chart a different course for my life. So I picked up stakes and went to New York City. And my Lord, Richard, for the first 2 or 3 weeks, I was lost. But I finally began to learn my way around and, you know, run into, they had a place that's no longer there, but it's called the Automat, and a place where you could get a cup of coffee and a piece of pie for 15 cents or something like that. And I found out that a lot of actors hung around there, and that there was a trade paper called Showbiz, and you could buy it on the newsstands. So I bought Showbiz, and it told you about possible job openings in the theater. And so I went to an audition. It was for children's theater. And I auditioned. I remember vividly the audition. I did an audition from a play called Of Mice and Men, and I was playing Lenny from Of Mice and Men. And I did the audition and went home, and in a day or two, I didn't have a phone in my room, but there was a phone in the hallway, and that was the only number that I gave out that I could leave. I could get messages there. And somebody came, knocked on my door and said, "You want her on the phone?" And I answered the phone, and it was a man introduced himself as the director of this children's theater, and he had seen me at the audition, and wanted to know if I would come down and meet with him. And I said, yes, sir, and I was down there in a very short time. And I ended up, I got a job. I was playing a character called Bombardo the Huntsman in Snow White. And he's the guy that the evil queen sends out to kill Snow White and bring her Snow White's heart. Well, instead of doing that, he goes out and kills a boar hog and brings the queen the boar hog heart. And then also they were doing Cinderella. And in Cinderella, they wanted me to understudy the prince and be a comedy character called Sir Dandy Pants. And plus I would be assistant stage manager, and I would drive the prop truck. Now, for that, they were willing to pay me $55 a week. Well, that looked like a lot of money to me.
You're now a professional actor.
Yeah, and being a professional actor, suddenly I'd gone to heaven. You know, I had an opportunity to do exactly what I dreamed of doing, what I'd been trying to do ever since I was in the seventh grade.
Wonderful.
Well, and okay, so I did. I went out on the road with this show, and it was playing to a children's audience is the most fantastic. They are the greatest audience in the world. They are so stimulating. And anyway, it was a dream come true, and I had so much fun. It was just fantastic. And we were out on tour for 10.5 months, and we went as far west as Oklahoma City. And we went as far north as you could get and stay in the United States. And also we played the South, we played the Deep South for many weeks. And it was fantastic. And okay, so the tour ended. I went back to New York, and I started going around auditioning, hoping I could get in a summer stock show. And I wasn't having any luck at all, and I did one audition, and as I was walking out, I heard somebody at the director's table say, "That's the worst actor I ever saw in my life." Well, that was a blow to me, but it didn't knock me out. I thought about it, and I began to realize what had happened is I had taken on the style that children's theater requires. Everything has to be broad. Gestures have to be broad. You have to speak loud and a little more distinct than you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that's what had happened to me, and I had to. Essentially tone down my acting. You know, I had to get more real. and I worked on that, and I eventually began to get some roles. I got in an off-Broadway play, I got a role, and I got a Vaseline Hair Tonics commercial. Television had just been heard of. And this was a couple of Vaseline Hair Tonic commercials that were going to run on television. Well, that was terrific. I then the next really good thing that happened to me, and I'm going to move on from here because my career was launched. I got a really good role in the touring company of Mr. Roberts. Henry Fonda was going to take a company out on the road, and he wanted to take it to California because he wanted Hollywood to see him playing Doug Roberts in the play Mr. Roberts. And so anyway, long story short, never went back to the University of Oklahoma, and I have been struggling to be an actor ever since that day in the seventh grade.
Well, you've done a wonderful job, Rand.
That's what happened to me when the bug bit me and how the bug bit me.
Well, you've done a wonderful job. Now, after Mr. Roberts, you got involved with some of the early TV, the Kraft Theater and everything, and I love those shows. It just feels like live theater, those shows. Did it feel like you were doing theater almost in front of the camera at that point? It has such a live energy to it.
In a way, yes. Yes. It's the thing that is scary about live television is there's no going back. You can't back up and do it again. You can't cut and pick it up. You have to somehow stumble through it. And if you forget a line, you're really in trouble. It took me quite a while to get into television because they were afraid of stage actors because stage actors were not familiar with the whole technique of television. And a classic story about a stage actor was doing some kind of a television drama, where he was an airplane pilot, and he was a fighter pilot or something like that. He was sitting in his plane, and suddenly he went blank. He forgot his line, forgot his dialogue, and he was stumbling around, and the director, sitting back somewhere, realized that the guy had gone blank. And so to get him out of it, the director thought, I'll just cut to commercial. So he did. He cut that camera and cut to commercial. Now, the guy who was going to do the commercial on television, on live television, he wasn't expecting to be called on quite that soon. And he looked up and he saw the red light on the camera, and he fumbled around and, picked up his cup of coffee or something and dropped it. And he was a mess. So now the director thinks, well, maybe that guy back in the cockpit has thought of his line by now. So he cut back to the airplane, and the actor is sitting there hitting himself on the head saying, 20 years in the legitimate theater, and I never flubbed a line. Never flubbed a line. He looked up and saw the camera was on him, said, oh, hell, and jumped out of the plane.
Oh, man.
So, I mean, those kind of things happened on live television, and anyway, it was just in knowing that you just had to make it work. You couldn't stop. There was no bailing you out. And,
yeah, no cutting in second takes, huh?
Nothing like that, and so you get used to it when you're there and you. Good thing about live television, that they would rehearse this sometimes as much as 3 weeks. Well, that's almost like doing a play.
Yeah.
So you had plenty of time for rehearsal, and it was still a lot of confusion with, cameras rolling around and stages on turntable and things spinning around. And still confusing. But you could just... I mean, you've rehearsed, everything is ready, and you hear the floor manager, they didn't call him a stage manager, they call him floor manager, say 1 minute to airtime, and he starts counting down. And boy, if you have any doubts, any fears, boy, you have a tendency to want to freeze up, but you don't. When they say, action, you go. You just do it. And it is exhilarating. Doing live television is so exhilarating. And I'm really kind of sorry they ever stopped, because it was almost, Richard, it was almost one of those orgasmic experiences that I experienced back in a seventh grade. And live television is just, you know, out of sight.
Well, the time is whipping by, but if you can stay a few extra minutes, I'm going to get permission to go a little overtime because we're having some questions coming in, Rance. This one relates to what you mentioned about actors' fears or freezing up. This is from Brenda in Woodland Hills, an actress, and she says that she has done a few independent films with actors that were not well known, and she has a part, she doesn't say who it is, but a part where she has a scene with a celebrity she's admired, and she said she's scared because this person she feels is so much better, well known, and she asked, you know, any suggestions if working with someone you almost feel intimidated working with, she says, you know, what you would maybe say to encourage her.
Well, I don't know that I have any sure cure for it. I would just say, don't be intimidated by someone that has experience or has a name or anything like that, because they have the same thing you have. And let me say one thing about nerves. If you think you're nervous, if you even consider taking something to calm you down or something like that, don't do that, because that's not nerves. That's the your adrenaline glands. Mm-hmm. We have adrenaline glands that when we're faced with a crisis or something, we have extra strength and extra speed, and it works in a theater. Anytime I don't feel a little edgy, a little nervous, I worry about it because I depend on that little extra kick of adrenaline to help me. And so don't if you feel nervous, don't worry about it. Just take it and say, thank you, God. You know, I'm a little nervous. And
wow.
And then you will drive right through that. But just I don't know, just don't let other actors, either their vast experience or their lack of experience, don't be intimidated by that. Just don't. Just steel yourself and say, you know, preparation. Preparation is really important. If you are well prepared, you can do anything.
Well, that's such wonderful advice, and I think that's very, very helpful. I think a lot of actors make the mistake, some of them, of alcohol or drugs or something, and I think that's a big, big mistake, like you say, Another question, this is from a Nicole to Playa Del Rey. She has a daughter that's starting to get work, and she says that she admires you as an actor, but also as a father, how well your kids turned out in the business, Clint and Ron and your granddaughter, Bryce. She said, as a parent, what are some things to keep her daughter grounded and to be not just a good actress but a good person, as your family has turned out to be?
Well, let me really tell you honestly what I believe. I believe what happens to children in this business is they become spoiled. And why is that? Because they oftentimes become the breadwinner for the family. Mm. The child is suddenly doing well in the business, making quite a bit of money, and they're suddenly living off what the child makes and becoming dependent on the child. And that is, I think, very harmful to the child, both as a person and as a performer, to be placed in that position. When my late wife and I, when Ron, I was an actor, and she was an actor, and then Ron suddenly, as a child, began to work a lot and suddenly had a television series, And then, okay, we were getting quite a lot of his income was coming in, and I said, listen, we can't live off of his income. We have to drive the kind of car that I can afford. We have to live in the kind of apartment or house that I can afford, and we can't become dependent on him. And so we didn't. Instead of, you know, driving a new Cadillac or even a new Ford, you know, we drove my old beat up Plymouth, and we lived in a very very reasonable apartment. We didn't allow his status as an actor to have any bearing, any influence on our lifestyle. And as a result, he didn't get a very big allowance. He got maybe 25 cents a week allowance, and he had to work for it. And so, I think money, economics, is a big thing, a big harmful thing that sometimes children and their families, their mothers and fathers, get caught in that trap.
And one last question, Rance. We actually went a little over, but it's been so fascinating. Bargaining for a couple extra minutes before they cut us off. You know, you've done so many parts. Is there any parts you'd like to do in the future you haven't, or just to, you know, keep working as it comes, or do you feel you've done all the roles you'd like to do? Is there any kind of project or part that you would like to do?
I have really no favorite role. My favorite role is what I'm working on right now. What I'm doing
that's
right
great.
Now, because my focus always goes on, you know, what I'm doing, not what I want to do or what I have done. But my focus always goes on the moment. And as far as some great role, I don't have. What I really would like right now, more than anything, would just be to work as an actor in a good Western. Mm. I love Westerns. They don't do very many anymore, I'll even reduce in a good Western, just a role in a good script. Boy, you know, you get a good script and it's you can fly. It's wonderful. I'm 87 years old. I'm in good health.
Wow.
Knock on wood.
You sound and look about 20 years younger, Rance.
Well, thank you. And I have no retirement plans. I'm not working toward retirement. I work toward getting my next job. Right now, I'm out of work looking for a job.
Well, those of you out there, directors listening, if you're doing a Western, and I want to put this out there, any of you that are going to make a Western, Rance is fantastic in everything, but I know he loves Westerns. John Ford was one of your favorites, I remember you telling me when we were on set together.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'd like to see you get that another Western, too, and I'm going to put that out there to director friends. That would be great.
Okay. Incidentally, and I ride, I mean, I grew up on horses. My first earliest memories are of me being on a horse, and so I'm so natural with animals, and especially on horses, that I'm a big asset to a Western.
Yeah, you sure are. You sure are. I remember in Sister Amy, you had a scene on the horse with the young actress Mimi Michaels that played Amy, and I remember you and I, we walked up Glendale to the equestrian center, I think about 6 or 7 a.m., and we were checking out the horses together one morning.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
You and that horse were just buddies. You know, you're just perfect on a horse. Well, it's been a joy, Rance. I'm so grateful to have you come on. Such a wonderful career, and thank you so much. Our actors and directors listening, I know we're really inspired by it. And all the best to you and your lovely wife, Judy.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. It's been a real pleasure talking with you, and I wish you the very best, too. You know, you're a very talented actor and director, and I wish you the very best.
Oh, thank you, Rance. We love you, and this has been a great, great show. Okay, well, they're cutting us off now. Thank you again, Rance, and thank you to all of you for listening to Richard Rossi Live.